This is VOA News. Via remote, I'm Marissa Melton. Problems with vote tabulation machines are sparking a growing number of rumors and allegations of possible fraud or malfeasance just hours after Americans went to the polls to cast ballots in today's midterm elections. Election officials in Maricopa County, Arizona, and Mercer County, New Jersey, said Tuesday that some of the machines were having trouble reading ballots. Maricopa County Board of Supervisors Chairman Bill Gates said in a video posted on social media that all votes will be tabulated.
The key for everyone to understand is everyone is still getting to vote. No one is being disenfranchised.
Mercer County officials posted a similar notice on the county's Facebook page. The message promised every ballot will be counted. No voter will be disenfranchised and the integrity of the election is intact and secure. In both cases, the voting machines in question were made by Dominion Voting Systems, which has long been a target of disinformation campaigns. Polls began to close in early evening on Tuesday, first in the midwestern state of Indiana and neighboring Kentucky, then in the southeastern states of Virginia, Georgia, and Florida. But people still voting were still voting in much of the country. All 435 seats in the House of Representatives are at stake on this election day, and 35 of the 100 seats in the U.S. Senate. More than 45 million people had already cast ballots in early in-person or mail-in voting before Tuesday. Some analysts suggest the total vote-in contest across the country could top the record 115 million tally set at the 2018 midterm elections. More on that story and everything we're covering at our website, voanews.com. From Washington, this is VOA News. AP's reporting that the UN General Assembly has scheduled a vote for Monday on a resolution that would call for Russia to be held accountable for violating international law by invading Ukraine, including by paying reparations. The draft resolution would recognize the need to establish, quote, an international mechanism for reparation for damage, loss, or injury arising from Russia's wrongful acts against Ukraine. Russia's veto power in the 15-member Security Council has blocked the UN's most powerful body from taking any action since President Vladimir Putin ordered his forces to invade Ukraine February 24th. But there are no vetoes in the General Assembly, which has already adopted four resolutions criticizing Russia's invasion. Pakistan's interior minister said Tuesday that evidence suggests a prominent Pakistani journalist was the victim of a targeted killing in Kenya, not an accidental shooting. Though he still needed more information on the incident, he was referring to TV journalist Arshad Sharif, who was shot dead on the evening of October 23rd. On the outskirts of the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, a Kenyan police spokesman declined to respond to the minister's comments. A hurricane warning is in effect for the Bahamas and parts of Florida, but the really bad weather is not expected to hit Florida until after Election Day is over. AP correspondent Julie Walker has the story.
National Hurricane Center specialist Jack Bevin says the hurricane warning for Nicole affects Florida's east coast from Boca Raton to just south of Flagler Beach, and even more parts of Florida as well as Georgia have storm surge warnings.
As high as 3 to 5 feet along parts of the open east coast of Florida. We're also expecting a fair amount of heavy rainfall.
It's already started raining in some places. He said 3 to 7 inches is expected. Many areas still reeling from Hurricane Ian.
Northeast Florida may actually have more severe impacts than it did from Ian because we are expecting the very large area of winds on the north side of the storm to cause prolonged high winds, high tides, and possible storm surges.
I'm Julie Walker.
Ukraine denied Tuesday that it was under Western pressure to negotiate with Russia. The government also doubled down on its insistence that talks could be held only if Russia relinquishes all of the territory it's occupied since its invasion of Ukraine in February. The remarks by Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky followed a Washington Post report on Saturday that the United States had encouraged Ukraine to indicate its willingness for talks. And senior officials in the Biden administration say President Biden will meet with the leaders of Egypt, Cambodia, and Indonesia during an overseas trip starting later this week. Marissa Melton, VOA News.
Today is Wednesday, November 9th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, Americans await results of crucial midterm elections as voting ends without major hitches.
The international observers are also taking note about whether those who have mobility challenges have unhindered access. This polling station is unique in offering curbside voting for those who roll up but can't make it inside.
Ukraine pleads for more air defense systems amid fears of more Russian missiles and drone attacks.
But Ukraine was able to deploy its air defenses. Ukrainian forces have shot down dozens of Russian fighter jets, helicopters, other aircraft and missiles.
And leaders from poorer countries demand for climate damage compensation from the West at the COP26 climate summit in Egypt. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. Americans voted without major hitches Tuesday in midterm elections. The vote is receiving intense scrutiny after 2 years of false claims and conspiracy theories about how ballots are cast and counted. 35 Senate seats and all 435 House of Representatives seats are on the ballot. Voters will decide races for state governors and state legislatures. Poll watchers from political parties were not the only groups who monitored the ballots. Some states welcomed observers from other countries under an international agreement. VOA's chief national correspondent Steve Herman was in Alexandria, Virginia, where some foreign monitors visited polling stations.
At a local arts center serving as a polling place, two British men walked in late Tuesday morning but were not there to vote.
We're observers, and this chap's from the Voice of America. Are we okay to just look around for half an hour?
Why don't you go ask the gentleman right there in the... I can get them for you.
Sure, thank you.
John Ault, the director of Democracy Volunteers, said he and Harry Bush are quick to explain their presence at each of their stops and show their credentials.
We always make sure we introduce ourselves because people are quite surprised when two British people turn up at their polling station.
A second official grants them permission to take seats along the wall, and they watch as voters' residencies are verified and secret ballots are cast. The international observers are also taking note about whether those who have mobility challenges have unhindered access. This polling station is unique in offering curbside voting for those who roll up but can't make it inside. Several voters we spoke with outside expressed mixed feelings about international observers monitoring their neighborhood polling station. Ed Schatz is an environmental lawyer.
I suppose it's a little disconcerting that Americans who are supposed to be a bastion of democracy need election observers, but I'd rather have them than not.
Here's retired teacher Lori Farnsworth.
It kind of, I guess, bolsters our heritage, our democratic heritage, and maybe will encourage us to step up and take pride in democracy.
Ed Myers recently retired as an Army officer.
I think it's great. I think they should. This is the best country in the world, so... come and learn from the best, is my opinion.
El Rashid Ibrahim is a taxi driver, originally from Sudan.
We are the top priority of the democracy in the world. We should monitoring the other country, not the other country monitoring us.
The Sudanese immigrant adds he is one voter who does not take this right for granted, because in his native country, a struggle is underway to restore democracy. Steve Herman, VOA News, Alexandria, Virginia.
Thanks, Steve. Joining us live in the studio for a unique perspective on the elections is VOA Executive Producer Steve Reddish. He has covered U.S. elections for decades. Welcome, Steve, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Any surprises?
The biggest surprise so far is that it's not the kind of big Republican wave that everybody was talking about. Turnout may break records again this year. More than 40 million voted before Election Day. That's one-third of the amount of people who turned out in 2018. Two of the reasons for the big turnout: people are unhappy with the economy and also concerned about how fragile the democracy is. Half the voters said that the high prices and inflation drove their votes. About 45% said the issues with democracy and election deniers, those who follow former President Trump about his false narrative of stealing the election, that's why they voted. So it's going to be a very close election, and that's pretty much what we all expected.
And Steve, results are trickling in. Should it have been faster, or is this deliberate because of the years of conspiracy theories about whether votes will count or not.
It used to be that, you know, by 11 o'clock, by 12 o'clock, we pretty much knew who won the elections. Because of the large turnout, because of the longer lines, now because also of the different ways people are voting, it is likely that it's going to take several days for official results to come out and for us to really understand how the election worked out. It's very close in several states, and I would expect that some recounts might be happening in those states, which will delay the election results further.
And final thoughts, Steve, where are people expecting some kind of a surprise, if any? Because both the Senate and the House, they're just in balance as to which party will control it. So where are people actually watching to see who will make this difference?
You know, it's going to be razor thin like the last election. The margins in the House, maybe the Republicans take control, but it does not look like they will take control with a large margin of votes in the House of Representatives. And it really looks like the Senate is going to come down once again to the state of Georgia, which may go into overtime if neither candidate wins 50% of the votes.
Well, we'll keep watching, Steve. Thanks. We appreciate your perspective. Thank you very much, sir.
Thanks for having me again.
Thank you very much. And for more on the U.S. midterm elections, check out voaafrica.com and voanews.com and stay tuned to your favorite VOA news programs for all the election results. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky has suggested he's open to peace talks with Russia, but he says he's sticking to demands which include the return of all Ukraine's occupied lands, compensation for war damage, and the prosecution of war crimes. As the war grinds on, a new report says the country urgently needs more air defense systems from the West, or Russia could repeat the tactics it's used in Syria to bombard Ukrainian cities from the skies. Henry Ridgewell has more from London.
In the early days of Russia's invasion, the skies above Ukraine were largely unprotected. Russian jets conducted air raids deep behind the front lines. But Ukraine was able to deploy its air defences. Ukrainian forces have shot down dozens of Russian fighter jets, helicopters, other aircraft and missiles. Justin Bronk is an analyst with the Royal United Services Institute.
The Russian Air Force retains a huge amount of potential firepower. It's just not being able to use it effectively at the moment because Ukraine is still denying them access to Ukrainian airspace above very low level because they still have these surface-to-air missile systems. But Ukrainian stocks of missiles for air defense were not nearly intended to last this long.
Meanwhile, Russia is using Iranian-made loitering drones and long-range missile strikes to pound Ukraine's cities and infrastructure. Again, Royal United Services Institute's Bronk.
The West really needs to focus on delivering additional ammunition and eventually replacement SAM systems with systems we can more easily support, because, of course, these are Soviet-era systems that we don't use ourselves in the West.
Western nations have supplied various air defense systems. Ukraine's defense minister said on Twitter Monday his country had received the first American NASAMS and Italian-made Aspide systems from the US, Norway and Spain. Defense Minister Alexei Reznikov said the priority number one is air defense systems. Our partners know this very well. Germany sent an Iris-T air defense system last month and is supplying dozens of Gepard anti-aircraft tanks. France has sent its Crotale air defense system. Bronk says Ukraine needs more from the West. Advanced fighter aircraft would also create an important deterrent.
Even a small number of Western fighters equipped with missiles and radars that are able to meet Russian fighters on relatively equal terms.
The likely consequence of Russia gaining control of the skies is tragically evident, says Bronk.
We know what happens in Syria when the Russian Air Force is able to attack with relative impunity from medium and higher altitudes. Large-scale bombardments with a lot of unguided bombs on not just frontline positions, but also besieged cities. We remember Aleppo and Homs.
Those cities were all but destroyed by Russian and Syrian government airstrikes in 2015 and 2016 at the height of the civil war. Tens of thousands of people were killed, forcing a withdrawal of rebel forces. As Russia's ground forces are forced back in eastern Ukraine, analysts fear the Kremlin wants to repeat the tactics used in Syria on Ukrainian cities. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
All over Iran, demonstrators are calling for an end to the Islamic Republic. After nearly 2 months of raucous protests, Iranians seem energized and emboldened, and this wave of protests seem different from the previous movements that were crushed by security forces. As VOA's Arash Rabasadi explained, jailing opposition leaders can be tricky when they are not defined leaders.
After nearly 2 months of taking to the streets and protesting their country's leadership, Iranians say security forces are now using tear gas indiscriminately in crowds and even people's homes and opening fire with live rounds. It started in September when Iran's morality police arrested a 22-year-old woman, Mahsa Amini, for what they described as immodest attire. 3 days later, Amini died in a hospital while in police custody. Iran officially blamed Amini's death on a heart attack triggered by a fall, but her father, Amjad Amini, told VOA that was a lie. He says she had no pre-existing health problems before her arrest. Her death put a face on a global movement for human rights. And that's when Iranians took to the streets chanting a popular refrain, "Death to Khamenei," a reference to the country's supreme leader. Worldwide demonstrations followed, demanding human rights and calling for an end to Iran's theocratic government. Unlike previous periods of turmoil in Iran, like the summer 2009 Green Movement protesting the presidential election, the mass demonstrations following Amini's death have no leadership. Iranians say the government has now turned to jailing protesters and even the lawyers who defend them. Many of them land in Tehran's Evin prison, notorious for housing political prisoners. In October, a fire engulfed parts of the complex and onlookers reported gunshots inside. Iran says the fire was a distraction created by prisoners attempting escape. Others say prison officials started it. The Washington Post reports at least 8 deaths from the blaze, with at least one fire started intentionally as prisoners were locked up. Those trying to flee met guards wielding batons and firing live ammunition. VOA Persian Siamak Behrampour spoke by phone with a prisoner in Iran who spent time in Evin, his voice altered to protect his identity. He refutes the Islamic Republic's claim that prisoners tried to escape, saying there is no escape from Evin. He describes heavy metal doors and long stretches of land to cover, and even if those doors came down, prisoners would have to run a long way just to reach waiting guards. And this all happened against the backdrop of the 43rd anniversary of the Iran hostage crisis. In 1979, after taking the staff of the U.S. Embassy in Tehran hostage, religious hardliners claimed power, burying Iran's monarchy and creating instead a theocracy. But today's young Iranians are mostly secular and inherently at odds with a government that requires women to wear hijabs, the law that led to Amini's arrest and death. Iranians say they don't know what comes next or how far the regime will escalate its response to mostly peaceful protests. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
In other news, a pair of dogs gifted by North Korean leader Kim Jong-un in 2018 are now mad in a South Korean political row with the country's former president, blaming his conservative successor for a lack of support as he gave the animals up. Moon Jae-in, a liberal who left office in May, received the 2 white Pakistan hunting dogs, a breed known to be indigenous to North Korea, from Kim following a peace summit in 2018. But Moon's office said he decided he could no longer raise the 3 dogs because the current president, Yoon Suk-yeol, is refusing to cover the costs for their care. Yoon's office shifted the blame to Moon, saying the discussions about financial support are still ongoing. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Leaders from poorer countries criticize wealthy governments and oil companies for driving global warming, demanding at Egypt's COP27 climate summit that they pay up for damages being inflicted on their economies. Ilan Rubens of Reuters reports.
I have the honor.
Leaders from emerging economies and poorer countries are using their speeches at Egypt's COP27 climate summit on Tuesday to criticize wealthy governments and oil companies for driving global warming, demanding they pay up for damages being inflicted on their economies. Prime Minister of the Bahamas, Philip Davis.
The realities of war, economic headwinds, the hangover from the pandemic, and competition among world powers cannot be used as justification not to confront these imminent dangers. Let's get real. It's only going to get worse.
Small island states, by increasingly violent ocean storms and rising sea levels, called on oil companies to shell out some of their huge recent profits, while developing African states called for more international funds. President of Rwanda, Paul Kagame.
The most valuable contribution that the developed countries can make is to reduce their emissions faster while investing with Africa to build sustainable green power.
South African President Cyril Ramaphosa added that the continent needs a predictable, appropriate and at-scale funding stream and technological support. Senegal's President Macky Sall said poor developing countries in Africa would resist calls for an immediate shift from fossil fuels if it is needed to boost their economies.
Let's be clear. We are for the climate. We are in favor of reduction of greenhouse gas emissions. But Africa cannot accept that our vital interests are undermined on the matter of the energy transition.
The comments reflected the tension in international climate negotiations between rich and poor states, as delegates attended the second full day of the two-week UN conference in Sharm el-Sheikh. Scores of other heads of state and government were scheduled to speak on Tuesday, but many of the world's biggest polluters, including the United States, China and India, were not on Tuesday's schedule.
That was Elaine Roberts of Reuters. Mali's National Human Rights Commission has condemned restrictions on press freedom after authorities suspended one of the country's main TV channels. Action was taken against Joliba TV after it aired an editorial criticizing rising intolerance and attacks on freedom of expression. Andy Risenberg reports from Bamako, Mali.
Mali's National Human Rights Commission released a statement Tuesday expressing concern about the exercise of certain civil and political rights, in particular those relating to freedom of expression and freedom of the press. The statement called on Mali's government to ensure respect for these rights at all times, in all places, and in all circumstances. The commission, which serves an advisory role to the government, also condemned all restrictions or attempts to restrict freedom of expression and the press. Last week, Mali's High Authority of Communication, HAC, suspended one of the country's main news channels, Joliba TV News. The authority accused Joliba TV of serious and repeated breaches and violations of the substantive provisions of the Code of Ethics for Journalism in Mali. Joliba's Director of Information, Mohamed Ataher Halidou, was summoned to HAC in October over an editorial in which he expressed concern about attacks on freedom of expression and democracy by the ruling military government, and in which he called on the HAC to speak on the issue. The HAC accused Halidou of making defamatory remarks and unfounded accusations concerning freedom of expression in Mali and the transitional authorities. Halidou has spoken openly about freedom of expression and freedom of the press in Mali, telling VOA News in March that self-censorship was rampant in the Malian media, as journalists feared reprisals from the government. Malian authorities this year have refused to grant accreditation to foreign journalists and detained or targeted several prominent government critics. The HEC was also behind the decision earlier this year to take France 24 and Radio France International off the air in Mali indefinitely, following reports on alleged human rights abuses by Mali's army. Halidou spoke out against the decision at the time, again in a televised editorial, deploring in one of many instances the lack of freedom of expression and press freedom in the country. Joliba TV released a statement last week confirming receipt of the HAC's decision and saying it had already composed an appeal. Maison de la Presse, Mali's main media advocacy organization, also released a short statement saying it regrets the suspension of Joliba TV News and called on the High Authority of Communication to reconsider its decision. Annie Risenberg for VOA News, Bamako, Mali.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me and our panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including results of the critically important U.S. midterm elections. We'll examine how these results could impact the lives of Americans in the months ahead. For this and more, join us for Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, guest host of Press Conference USA. Tatiana Voroshko from VOA's Ukrainian service talks with Peter Pomerantsev about the false rhetoric Russia uses to justify its invasion of Ukraine. Pomerantsev compares Moscow's use of propaganda to Nazi Germany's during World War II. He urges the world to condemn this disinformation campaign and the atrocities which flow from it. The dangers of Russian propaganda, next on Press Conference USA on The Voice of America.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com. And check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA, and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Chino Dwofo in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States has demonstrated its commitment to countering systemic corruption and the Russian government's malign influence campaigns in Moldova by imposing sanctions on 9 individuals and 12 entities. The sanctioned individuals and entities include oligarchs widely recognized for capturing and corrupting Moldova's political and economic institutions, and those acting as Russian instruments seeking to manipulate the United States and its allies and partners, including Moldova and Ukraine. These sanctions expose not only Russia's covert strategy in Moldova, but also demonstrate how corruption undermines the rule of law, said Undersecretary of the Treasury for Terrorism and Financial Intelligence Brian Nelson. The Treasury Department's Office of Foreign Assets Control, or OFAC, designated Vladimir Plahotniuk, a former government official involved in corruption. Plahotniuk's bribery of law enforcement officials reflected his long-standing efforts to capture and corrupt Moldova's judicial and law enforcement institutions, while using his wealth and political influence to undermine political rivals and rule of law in the country. The State Department imposed visa restrictions on Plahotniuk in January 2020 for his involvement in significant corruption. As part of that action, Plahotniuk and his immediate family members are generally ineligible for entry to the United States. OFAC also designated Ilan Shor, leader of the Shor Party, for being responsible for directly or indirectly engaging in interference in a foreign government election for the benefit of the Russian government. A beneficiary of a large-scale 2014 money laundering scheme related to the theft of $1 billion from Moldovan banks, Shor has worked with other corrupt oligarchs and Moscow-based entities to create political unrest in Moldova and sought to undermine Moldova's bid for EU membership. OFAC designated 7 additional individuals and 12 entities that have been involved in the Kremlin's attempts to interfere in Moldova's elections. Russia has sought to advance its own interests by providing illicit financing, including funds earmarked for bribes and electoral fraud, to support pro-Kremlin political activity in Moldova. According to Undersecretary Nelson, Russian influence operations attempt to exploit weaknesses in target countries in order to destabilize them from within. These designations reaffirm the U.S. commitment to tackling corruption as a first-order national security threat and to promoting accountability for malign actors who seek to undermine Moldova's democratic institutions and elections. The United States will continue to impose costs on those threatening democracy abroad.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.